Good morning, and welcome to the Tuesday morning show. I'm one of your hosts, Phil Huff, and this morning on the show, we have a recorded interview with Bruce Smith, a return guest for longtime listeners of the morning show. Bruce is a science writer, wildlife biologist, and children's fiction author. He's retired from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, amongst others. And today he's going to talk a little bit about the third book in his trilogy called The Legend Keepers. And we're also going to talk about an event that's taking place in Sandpoint in the evening of Tuesday, March 11th, the day that this will air. Welcome to the show, Bruce.
Thanks for inviting me, Bill.
So, give our listeners, for those who might not have caught your interview a year or two ago, a little bit more background about yourself, particularly as a biologist and mountain goat expert.
I'm originally from the Midwest, but had always wanted to live in the West. And so when I chose a school to go to, the University of Montana is where I went, and I did a bachelor's degree on wildlife biology there. Went on to do a master's, which was my first introduction to wilderness. It's where I really began getting my education in wilderness because I lived in the Selway Bitterroot for most of 2 years while I studied mountain goats. And went on to work for primarily the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service on the Wind River Indian Reservation. I was the first biologist there, helping the tribes to recover their wildlife. And then for years, as you know, I was a biologist at the National Elk Refuge in Jackson, Wyoming. During that time, I went back to school about halfway through that 22 years in Jackson and got a PhD degree at the University of Wyoming.
Nice thing about being a wildlife biologist in the West, your duty stations are awfully beautiful.
Yes.
Excellent. Well, how did you, at what point did you make a transition or start the aspect of your journey as a writer?
Oh, that's a good question. It's funny that I ever became one because when I was a kid, I didn't like writing. I didn't even like reading. I read no more than I had to for school. I wanted to be outside, mucking around in marshes, be in the woods, catch turtles, whatever, building things, built boats and whatever. But then I had a teacher, and I think it was eighth grade, an English teacher. And I often tell students that I talk to, sometimes it just takes one person to change your life. And in a way, she did, because she took a special interest in me, or at least I thought she did, and encouraged my writing. And from then on, I started reading more. And I began writing things when I was, in eighth grade and older than that. I never published anything, never had any aspirations to do that until I worked for the federal government. And then that became part of my job, was publishing my research findings. But I also wanted to present those findings in written form to a general audience, because we need lots of people to be involved in conservation for it to be successful. So I started writing for magazines as well.
Tell us a little bit about some of the books you've written. The I guess, well, for lack of a better word, say the adult topics or the all ages topics.
Yeah, the first 5 books I wrote were adult nonfiction books. They are all about science, natural history. One's outdoor adventure, but it certainly involves natural history as well. And all of my books are message driven. They were written for specific purposes to, in most cases, sort of make the science more available to a general public about topics that were interesting to me. And I think topics that are very current I wrote about. So the first one was some work that I have been doing on the Elk Refuge to support an EIS, which became a book. I didn't know it was going to, but it did. That was the first one way back in 2004. I mentioned I worked on the Wind River Reservation, Indian Reservation, which is probably the most amazing thing I did during my career. And I wanted to write up what I had been involved with for those 4 years, because I wanted to honor the people that I worked with, the Shoshone and Arapaho people. And the legacy they are leaving for those that come after them by the amazing conservation success they implemented there. I was just helping out. And so that was Wildlife on the Wind. And then after working those 22 years in Jackson and the Elk Refuge and with the Jackson Elk Herd, the largest elk herd in North America, I certainly learned a lot. I learned a lot, not just about wildlife and wildlife management, but about people. And really, wildlife management is almost a misnomer. It's really more about people.
People, yeah.
Yes, politics, economics, sociology, all of that. And so the book that I wrote based on those experiences there, Where Elk Roam, tries to convey to the public how wildlife management, wildlife conservation, species conservation is not a reflection of the science alone. Some cases, not even very much a reflection of that, but of all the other things that go into it based on people's values and sociology, economics, and so forth.
And one of the books, and you're going to touch on this in your presentation tonight, I'm sure, is the book about mountain goats, Life on the Rocks, which certainly when we talk about mountain goats locally, we talk about human behavior as much as goat behavior.
Yeah, that's that was really a labor of love. That was the fourth book that came out back in 2014, and then hardcover, and then in 2020, a softcover version of that came out. Both of them large format, over 100 color photographs of mountain goats where they live, other species that live in the alpine as well. And I wanted to write that book. For one thing, I had like 5,000 slides of mountain goats I needed to do something with. And rather than keep them in the storage cabinet for the slides and then the digital ones just stored on my computer, I thought there would be an outlet for those where people could see and enjoy them, because most people never get out and see a wild mountain goat. I mean, we could poll 100 people across the US, particularly if we weren't where you and I are here, where there are mountain goats, and we would find maybe 1% of the people we asked if they'd ever seen a mountain goat.
It's a
But
higher.
also, it was only the second book ever written about mountain goats. Doug Chadwick's book, The Beasts of Color of Winter, was the first, and I wanted to do a more continental perspective of what's going on with mountain goats, their biology, their behavior, and their conservation needs.
It's a wonderful book, and let's just launch into a little bit about this evening's presentation. Starts at 5 p.m. at Matchwood Brewing. Soft start. We'll actually probably have you start talking around 5:30 or so. But tell us a little bit about the message you're going to be delivering about mountain goats tonight.
It comes largely from the book, which is to let people know more about this animal, which is truly a unique animal. It has no close relatives in the New World. It only has three different genuses that it's closely related to, and they're in Asia and Europe. The closest relative of the mountain goat in North America or in the New World is the muskox. That tells you how unique it is, because it doesn't look a heck of a lot like a muskox, and yet genetically it's more closely related to that than, say, doll sheep, bighorn sheep, pronghorn antelope, or anything else. So I want to talk about that, where they occur in North America, a little bit about their biology, what makes them so unique in terms of their behavior, what are some of their conservation needs, because we're finding that at least in the southern part of its range, say southern British Columbia, Alberta, Montana, Idaho, and Washington, numbers have been declining pretty steadily for several decades now. And it won't just be talking, you'll get to see a lot of those photographs I talked about.
And they are beautiful, having previewed that before. So, how did you end up making the pivot to writing a book for children, young adults?
That's something I'm somewhat perplexed about sometimes too. I had never written fiction. I had never written for children. Hadn't done environmental education for children. It had always been adult focused. But I was doing a book tour for this book, Life on the Rocks, about mountain goats, a number of years ago, 10 years ago now almost. And it was really disappointing that when I would do book events in libraries and museums and so forth, there were no kids there. I was always talking to adults. And that disappointed me because one of the real messages from Life on the Rocks is how climate change is so rapidly affecting the alpine environment and the species that live there. The alpine's warming 2 to 3 times faster than the global average. So species that live there have to adapt to that more rapidly if they can. And this is particularly important for kids because they have their whole lives ahead of them. And it's not just about the alpine. Of course, climate change is affecting all the biomes. It's affecting everything, the oceans and the land. And so there was a science article that came out a few years ago. I think it was 2021, and the authors predicted that today's 6-year-olds will experience 3 times as many climate disasters as their grandparents will. And on average, they'll be more severe.
It's amazing. And what I've read the trilogy, and so readers or listeners who understand that have heard you before, that the third book in the trilogy was published last August. And so that's the most recent. But the trilogy is really wonderful, and it culminates with that marvelous third book, The Promise. And for me, it just weaved together a really compelling storyline with some great characters and a lot of good science that's presented in a way that's really understandable for the age range you're targeting, the younger kids, but even adults would enjoy it. And so it's a masterful job. I'm hoping maybe without giving the whole plot line away, you could talk a little more about how you were able to do that.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity because this was truly a labor of love being able to do this. And as you said, it's written for children. The target age group is really 8 to 12 year olds, 3rd to 6th graders, but also for their families. And I like to say for kids our age too, because this is a book really for anyone who's interested in nature and a really good adventure story. This does take place in the mountains. And it has two protagonists, an orphaned female mountain goat, Buddy. And then in the second book enters human characters. The first book is all animal characters. In the second book, the co-protagonist is Garson. And he's an introverted 12-year-old boy who just doesn't fit in, doesn't have friends. And as you know from reading it, has a lot of personal issues. And he becomes an environmental advocate. And as the story progresses, he and Buddy end up becoming sort of partners in an effort to make the world aware of what's going on in the mountains. I wanted to present the climate issue through the eyes and lives of animals and children. So much of what's available is written by adults. And I didn't want to be preachy with a target audience of young people. I wanted them to learn about this from characters who they could relate to, characters like them. And also, animals make very trusted teachers. So a lot of kids will pay more attention to what an animal has to say to them.
So, Bruce, do you have a short reading for us?
Of course, this is about a one-page excerpt from the second book, Legend Keepers, The Partnership. And it features Garson, this 12-year-old introverted boy who doesn't fit in. But all of a sudden, something's happened in his life, and he becomes turned on by glaciers. He wants to know everything about them. And so, what he's learning, he tells his mother about one evening at dinner time. At the dinner table, he rattled off facts each evening. There are glaciers on every continent except Australia, he tells her. Most of them have been around for hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of years. And you know what else? His mom's fork and knife hovered over her plate. Her son's enthusiasm was infectious. What else? The ice in glaciers is so thick and heavy, it actually moves like something living. Not that people can actually see them crawling. Garson poked some peas across his plate. Scientists learned it by studying them for years. Garson paused and examined his mom. Don't you think it's awful? Think what's awful, honey? Something so big and old could actually disappear. She laid her silverware down, elbows on the table, hands folded beneath her chin. She eyed him intently. I haven't seen this much passion in him since we took the training wheels off his bike. They think some might not disappear, only shrink a lot, Garson said. Then the glaciologists won't call what's left glaciers, just ice since has studied the ones in Glacier National Park since 1991. Guess what he thinks? I don't know. He thinks the park's glaciers might be gone by 2030, all of them in just a few years. How does he know? Because of how fast they're getting smaller.
Everybody must think glaciers are cool. I don't know anyone who hasn't seen a glacier that wasn't inspired. And so I think that's one of the captivating things about the book is how you're able to weave in that science of glaciers with the curiosity of a child.
And that's what kind of bonds the two main characters, Buddy and Garson. Buddy, of course, lives up there, and glaciers and permanent snow are so important to mountain goats. We've only been learning that in the last, few decades. And then on the other hand, glaciers and permanent snowfields are so important here in the West to people. Provides irrigation water, municipal water. It provides the water, most of the water flow for our streams. For those of us that are trout fishermen, that's pretty darn important. And it goes on and on, all the values that stored reservoir of water in ice and snow that's slowly released in the summer and fall provides for us. In the greater Yellowstone area, 85% of the water that we're dependent upon in these communities around it comes from snow and ice. So it's quite significant.
So really important topic. And again, one of the things I'm impressed is how well you manage the treatment of that topic, both in the books for all ages, the Life on the Rocks, as well as in the series for the middle-aged school kids. A wonderful opportunity for those who are listening and available to come out tonight to Matchwood from 5 to 7 and listen to Bruce Smith. The event is sponsored by the Friends of Scotchman Peaks. It's free and open to the public. Just come down to Matchwood. Bruce, you'll be there focusing with your slides and talking about mountain goats and all. But if folks have questions about the trilogy of books, The Legend Keepers, you'll be available to talk about that as well, I'm sure.
Hard to stop me.
Yeah. What's your next project?
You know, that's a tough question because this is the first time in 20 years I haven't been working on at least one book. Sometimes I was writing two at a time. And I'm not working on a book right now. I'm focusing really on doing this sort of thing, the environmental education aspect. As you know, besides in Sandpoint, I'm going to be in Thompson Falls and Libby talking about these same topics. April 2nd, I'm back in Bozeman. I got a presentation. And so I'm trying to get, I guess you would say, as much mileage out of this as I can before my next brainstorm strikes me.
What's your website folks can go to, or listening or from out of town can go to find out more about other events or about your various publications?
Sure. If you want to find out more about me and my writing, go to www.brucesmithwildlife.com. And you can also sign up if you want to subscribe to my blog. I put out something interesting on natural history and science about twice a month, free, of course, and you can sign up on the website for that.
Once again, I'd like to thank you for coming on the show this morning, Bruce.
Thanks, and we'll look forward to seeing everybody on Tuesday.